SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three. I'm laughing because Tom on Twitter saying he found Steve Asmussen to be positively glib and giving and giddy, almost giddy. He gets like that. When you get him, and he was busy, obviously. He had things going on. You could hear in the background that he was still training, but. Good to catch up with him, but that is funny, Tom. Yeah, when there's a few people like that. In fact, I discussed yesterday, I had a conversation, Jason Beam, nice enough to invite me to do a segment with his podcast, and I actually talked about that a little bit, about how getting people like a Steve Asmussen and way back when, you know, Todd Pledger, getting them to relax and laugh and to be glib that's sort of a goal and this segment we're going to talk about Down the Stretch Ranch and the co-founder. Boone McKenna is going to join us, and the co-founder of the Hollendorfers, Jerry and Janet, and I talked to Jerry about the ranch at Los Al. Jerry's another of those guys that I try to make laugh, and I know it's been a good segment when I make Jerry Hollendorfer laugh, and certainly Boone, you know what I mean, when you get Jerry kind of. You get them off balance a little and make them laugh. It's got to be, you've done something.
Yeah, you're doing good work when you can get Jerry to crack a smile.
It's so nice to have you on. And what you're doing at the ranch is unbelievably valuable. And lots of people have heard about the Warhorse Project. But what you're doing, same kind of therapy work with the veterans. Talk about how this came about.
I just started with, I was an agent in Northern California and worked with Jerry for years and had a friendship, and I kept saying, our family has a bunch of land out in Eastern Washington, out in the middle of nowhere, and we've got tons of water and power's cheap and lots of land, and I said, let's start a thoroughbred retirement out there, and I told him a story of my cousin who lost his leg when he was 18 at Vietnam, and he used to groom horses for my dad at a small track called Playfair in Spokane, Washington. And Mark, the horses calmed his brain, slowed him down, and, he groomed four or five, and, he paddocked him with the wooden leg, and just, he had a love for him. So when I came home with this, my cousin Mark, who's passed on since then, he's like, Boone, use him. He was going to be my veteran coordinator, and he goes, let's keep using those horses to bring guys out who need help that in an unconventional therapy type way. And so I was like, yeah, great idea, no sense just having them standing around. So we started with that, and then Mark died 1 year into it. He passed away of some agnostic cancer, but we've continued the mission with bringing guys out here. And this year alone, we've had, close to 100 guys out. And, I have regular guys that, from certain parts of PTSD to 100% PTSD, and they love we're so far out and in such a remote place, the serenity of the whole ranch, they love it. They come to stay for a couple of days and they end up staying longer every time.
It's wonderful. And, your family, we should fold in. You mentioned Playfair and you mentioned, your role as an agent at the Golden Gate and at Bay Meadows. And Tim, the name Tim McKenna, certainly familiar to anybody that plays the races. And you don't have to be confined to being a West Coast player. Everybody knows the McKennas.
Yeah, Tim, and then my dad started it all. He trained back in the 70s and the 60s, and He's always just been a horseman, and we've always, you know, that was back in the day where you turned your horses out for four or five months a year. You'd run at one certain meet and then kick them out. So growing up, we always had three or four retired horses, some of my mom and dad's favorites out in the field. And so that was just always kind of a part of the family. But yeah, and Tim and his wife, Jan, are great. They've helped with the ranch because their ranch in Yakima is kind of a halfway point for a lot of these horses that are coming out from Southern California and Northern California. So they'll stop at Tim's ranch and kind of come down a little bit, and then I'll run over to Tim's. It's about a three-hour drive, and pick him up and bring him on out to the ranch. So yeah, Tim's great, and yeah, they do a great job.
What kind of horse? There's got to be a screening process on this, right? Because not necessarily every off the track thoroughbred is going to be an ideal candidate, but of course, at the same time, you know, the personalities. It's an interesting equation, because I'm sure among the veterans, there's, you know, unique personalities, and horses sometimes bond with, you know, with certain kinds of people. It's one of their great qualities too, that they, you know, that they might let their guard down with somebody. Right? I mean, that's a big part
of
this.
And that's happened multiple times. I've had a couple of horses that, you know, when they get here, they're sour and just don't want to be around the herd. They want to, you know, they'll stand off, they hardly will eat. It takes them 8 or 9 months just to, you know, to calm back down. But when we go out there, we'll take our four-wheeler, we'll go up in the middle. I usually have one field that has about 20 or 22 in it, and then we'll just kind of walk around them. And they're friendly, you know how they are. They're friendly as heck, but some of them are standoffish. And 8 out of 10 times, the standoffish horse will come up to the military guy and kind of nuzzle him, and then they'll say, "Okay, I want him." And the guy, you know, they automatically fall in love with that horse. And then we'll catch him and bring him on down into the arena and do different kind of things depending on how much the veteran knows and how much he wants to know. I mean, I've had guys start from not knowing a horse to riding, to being able to ride, but not wanting to ride, just wanting to hold them while I work on their feet or have them do their tails and groom them. And then I said, "Oh, so that's your horse every time you come to the ranch." And when they come back, we're going up to see Turok, or we're going up to see, you know, whichever horse Summer hit. You know, they'll pick out the horse, and then that's their horse every time they come out. And it's like you said, the horse has I can't catch them, and they'll walk right up to these guys. So it's really cool in that way.
Are you working with, I suppose, the VA or you know, some
we partnership? Got connected up with it. It was a hard road to get hooked up with them, just because it's just me and my dad out here. So, you know, they were wanting to, you know, you have to have facilitators for this and facilitators for that. And I was like, "Hey, I'm by myself out there, and I'm not bringing groups of 30 people out. I'm trying to keep it as personal and as one-on-one or three-on-one, you know, with the horse for a safety part of it, and I feel like I get a lot more done like that." So the Veterans Administration in Washington finally sent like 10 people out last spring, and I just kind of showed and all of them were, you know, military, and so I just showed them what we do and what, you know, kind of how I wanted to have this place set up. And then after they left that day, they're 100% on board. So they've been, you know, referring people out to me, which has been helpful, because now, you know, I have kind of a constant flow of guys coming out through the Washington Veterans Administration.
How about on your end? And is there an intermediary, or is there someone on your team at the ranch that has experience in, whether it's the PTSD or any of the, you know, any of the, you know, the challenges?
No, just, you know, my dad was military, and my man Mark died, so it's just me. Wow. On that end. But I've gotten to know a couple of these guys that are, should back up a little, because three-star General Mike Ferreter and a Colonel Greg Allen I became friends with early on in this, and they kind of told me a lot of things to do, a lot of things to look out for, and a lot of things just not to do. And they said to keep it small, to where I have more one-on-one interaction with these guys, rather than turn it into a big commercialized, you know, bring out 500 people and they say, you know, that the guys really don't get anything out of that. The guys that are coming out here and that are getting referred to come out here, conventional therapy doesn't work at all. And so they need something like this where you're not saying, okay, from 9 to 10, we're going to sit down and do this. From 10:30 to 11, we're doing that. It's not like that at all. I let them get up on their own time, you know, and I'm doing my work. And if they want to come and join, they're in with me. And you know, and as little, because some of them are pretty well medicated up, and, you know, it takes them a while to get the fuzz out in the morning and get rolling. So when they come out of their place, they live. I have a living quarters for them right down by the barn. So when they get up in the morning and, you know, I'll whip them up some breakfast and I'll say, well, this is kind of the you know, a day on the ranch. And so we'll go through the horses and they absolutely love it. But as far as having, you know, I really haven't gotten to that where, you know, I bring in other facilitators, because my goal is just to make it a personal experience for the guys and me, and make them as comfortable as can be, and to where they can just let their guards down and not have to, you know, there's no horns going off, there's no sirens, it's just, you know, a few coyotes yipping at night and horses whinnying, and that's about it.
You've got some horses that, and I know that I can just see by the names, there's a few that that Jerry trained, and one name that the first name that jumps off at me is Trumpet Player Jay.
He's one of those horses that you can't catch with a butterfly net. And once you catch him and get a halter on him, he just melts in you. But he is so hard to catch. But he'll walk up to those guys. He's a perfect example of that type of horse. And just, you know, he made $500,000, I think.
He of course, named for Jay Goldstein and
right.
the trumpeter, and you know, had a nice long career, a nice gelding. And I, you know, you got another one that jumps off at me a little bit, Exit Stage Left, who was a stake. He was a stake horse.
Yeah, he won the California Derby.
There you go.
Yeah. And I showed my friend Tom Dutrich. He came out. His Bomber's his nickname. He's the director of racing for the California Fairs and been a jockey agent in Northern California. And he was back when Bay Meadows was running, he was their racing secretary. But his dad, he came out to Washington to visit his dad, so he came out and stayed a couple of days with him. And I showed him Exit Stage Left yesterday, and he's like, God, he could go back into training. A big, great, big. I mean, he looks like $1 million.
How many horses? How many horses do you have?
We have 28 right now, retired.
Wow. Are you working with Karma, or what's the avenue getting horses?
You know, I was pretty naive jumping into it. I knew how to take care of the horses and this and that, but as far as the grant writing and all the funding, but we're getting there. We're going on to year four now. Thoroughbred Charities of America has granted us 2 years. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance sent their vets out this summer, so we got full accreditation from them, and they're going to grant us. So we're getting good, really good things are happening. And that's when I started this. You know, my goal, I don't know if I can sustain it, was to, you know, horse racing's the sport of kings. You know, I was going to try, and I asked Jerry, I was like, you know, I'd really like to keep this funded through the thoroughbred industry, you know, my friends and family, and Jerry and however he can help, and let the veterans use their money for what they need, you know what I mean, and make this about the thoroughbred industry and the thoroughbred, you know, how great the people in our industry are, that, and kind of bring a little awareness out to people, because we've lost a lot of our racing in Washington.
Sure.
And what I grew up at the racetrack, and I mean, it was an experience I wish I could have given to my kids, but the racing had already kind of faded away from Eastern Washington, so they didn't really get to learn the greatness of horse racing and how fun and you're competing every day, what a great sport it is. So our goal is to fund this thing through our industry.
What is the optimal scenario here, size wise I mean, just looking at pictures of the ranch, it looks like it's expansive, and you could you could take on more horses.
Bomber was saying, he goes, you could have 100, and I go, we easily could, but you know, that would have, because right now, honestly, it is my dad's 84 and me taking care of the whole ranch, and we're trimming and doing everything, and the horses, you know, they come first, they look like $1 million, but they get to roam, you know, 140 acres, so they'll be at one end of the ranch, and so, you know, it's just, I've never, knock on wood, had any trouble with colic or anything. I mean, they're just out, and they want to be out in the field, and you bring them in, and I show the guys that too. I go, you want to see anxiety, I'll grab one of the horses out of the field who's been out there for 8 or 9 months, and I'll lead him away from the field and take him into the barn, and they just fall apart. And I said, this is how, you know, and they kind of look at him like, Jesus, that's, you know, so there's so many similarities. And I said, and the horse will start, you know, kind of shaking and whinnying and looking out, you know, where's my herd? So, yeah, it's, we have room to, I mean, we could take 100, but we're a long ways from that.
How many vets are on the grounds at any one time on that side? How many can you?
The most I had out here, we had 11 this summer, because we're 2 miles up from the Columbia River. It's called Lake Roosevelt, so it goes from Grand Coulee Dam all the way to Canada. It's like 187 miles of river, and it's there's like a 13-10 line on it where there's no docks, there's no houses, it's just still wild. So, you know, we'll do the horse stuff in the morning. When I had those 11 of them out here, I took them out. We have a family boat, and I took them down to the river and shuttled a couple. I got us a nice beach, and so we just went down to the beach, and the guys swam and pulled them tubing, and then came back up and did the horse stuff again in the evening, and they just, it's just wonderful.
But it sounds
fabulous.
I try to
keep it with me. And usually when the veterans come out, I'll say, you know, if you have a buddy of yours that you're comfortable with, bring him out. And then I have a couple guys that, you know, that just want to come by themselves, that don't talk much. But you can see, you know, that it works, or they wouldn't be coming back.
Can you also, or would it be all right if I'm looking at this roster, you've got Summer Hit there as well.
Who's
old friends would be thrilled to have him.
Oh, he's gorgeous too. We got some nice, I mean, like, we have nice, yeah, they're all, you know, I think there's probably over $8 or $9 million of earnings standing out in that field.
Well, Summer Hit was a multiple graded stake winner. I mean, he's a tourist attraction. And I know that you wouldn't want it to interfere, obviously, with the veterans and what you know, their experience. But have you considered, you know, the destination concept, the way, you know, the way old friends and the horse park, would that interfere with what you're doing?
I think that there is time for both to do that. And I've kind of, like, my family, my sister's a high school principal at the biggest high school in Spokane. So I was telling her, I go, okay, some of your classes that have the kids that don't have the capacity to go to college or simply don't want to, and they're looking for some type of thing to do. So she sent out some of their, I guess you would say, not kind of at-risk kids to go the wrong direction after high school. And so I've had groups of them come out and introduce them to us, like, hey, I know, you know, there's really no racing in Spokane, but if you guys, you know, and welcome them to come out, I'll teach you our industry, and you could have a job if you're small as an exercise rider, small enough, a jockey or a groom or an agent or a, you know, a person that works in the race office. So there's so many jobs at the racetrack, and it's the kind of a job where the harder you work, the further you can go. If you don't want to work hard, you'll be stuck not doing much. I said, but if you have a work ethic and you love what you're doing in the thoroughbred industry, you can move right up. And so I've had probably, I don't know, 30 or 40 groups from her school come on out and go through the ranch and that. But yeah, I'm not too sure how to really hone in on that.
Well, and you bring up, I mean, as part of the overwrap with this, the racetrack, as we've discussed so many different times with any number of people, with Johnny D and Tony, yeah, and virtually anybody, Tony Black. The racetrack is its own kind of safety net for people that don't fit in mainstream life, and that, and it's always been that way. So that's a tremendous outreach, Boone. I mean, to offer up the ranch and the facility and the expertise, for kids, and of course the veterans, to find a balance in their lives and maybe find a future.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and just to introduce them to something that they've never even really heard about. Most of the kids today, and at least in Eastern Washington, horse racing, and it's like, you wouldn't believe it's a whole race tracker. You could become a race tracker.
if you're not born into it, then you and your brothers obviously were, and so you had a choice, I suppose, but
I killed my mom when I told her I was going to be an agent after college, and she cried for a month. Oh no!
Well, do you miss the track? I mean, I really miss
like Jerry and the stuff with all my friends there. I miss that, and I miss watching them run. But I'm pretty fulfilled out here. I'm getting to spend time with my dad. That is priceless, and then seeing these horses in the morning after a snowfall, and they're playing, and it's just it takes some of the sting out of it. But I do miss the action of the track and all my friends.
When did your dad retire?
Oh, he was a school teacher. He hasn't taught since raced horses since probably 1983, I would say, 83, 84. Okay. He was leading trainer in the state in 1977, I think.
Wow.
But yeah, so he was always kind of a ranch guy. So and then Tim kind of took over. That's how Tim got started. He took over my dad's stable at Playfair when he was about 18 or 19, right out of high school. And then Tim just kind of took the ball and kept running with it.
Well, and does very well. This sounds like it's just even still in the fledgling, development stage. I can tell how fulfilling it is, how can people support down the stretch? What can people do to help you?
We have a website that does just donations. Everything is everything we do out here. And I told Jerry that I said, I'm honest, and anybody can see where every penny goes, and just to keep continuing and growing, growing it out. So pretty much everything we raise from the golf tournament, I built an addition off the barn, and more field sheds for the horses, and just kind of things like that. It all goes back into the ranch and keeping it rolling. And I just telling Jerry just last week, I was like, I had a friend who had a daughter with MS and asked if she could bring her out. And I was like, yeah. So I brought this old horse called Oligarch. He made $250,000, and he's a great horse. If you put a little kid on him, he won't do anything. You put somebody on him that knows how to ride, he goes right after it. He's so smart. But she had MS anyway. And so we put her and her husband, and I threw her up on Oligarch, and she rode him in the arena for 2 hours. And he's looking at me, he goes, she has not smiled like this so there's so much other stuff these horses, I'm going to try to stick with the military part of it, but there's so many other things that these horses can do. I mean, just the movement of the motion of the horse underneath her with her MS, you could see she was using muscles in her stomach and in her hips and her legs that she hadn't been able to use at all. And so, there should be 5 things just like this offering multiple deals in every state in the country.
Very much. And I imagine this conversation and follow up that we'll do, I imagine you're going to prompt people to think about you know, about doing it and creating, you know, satellite branches.
Yeah, exactly. And we could open up another one, you know, in Western Washington. It's just, it's such an optimal place here because we have so much land, and I understand California and those other states where things are so expensive. But I have a guy flying out, a military guy flying out from Milwaukee after the first of the year. He was a Ranger, and just through word of mouth, he's going to come out and stay a couple of weeks. He's struggling. And so, you know, to get on a plane and get out here, you know, some of the guys don't really like going through the airport, or, you know, getting them out here from other states is a little, you know, it's a little bit tricky, but we're getting it done.
Now, this is from so many, and we just touched on it in 15, 20 minutes, but from so many different vantage points, you know, we're thinking about what it does for the visitors, but it's also for off-the-track thoroughbreds, for retirees, and
right.
For the most part, you've got, you know, 10-year-old and ups, it looks like, and I will let Rodolfo Garcia, we got to get word to him that Oligarch is out there with you, because he won the Tropical Park Derby 6-8 years ago.
Oligarch. Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, he won the Tropical Calder.
He is one of the smartest horses I've ever been around. I opened the gate. His field's about a quarter of a mile away from the barn. I opened the gate, and I have a hitching post by the barn with a tub sitting on it, and I usually put a half a gallon of grain in there, and I'll open that gate, no halter, no nothing. He beelines it to that hitching post. He eats his oats and waits for me to come and put a halter on him. I mean, he's the coolest horse. But they're all, you know, they all have their own, just like the vets, they all have their own story. And that's what I tell these guys. I go, I guarantee these horses have traveled way more than I ever have. And they've seen more things than I have. They're looking at them like, and I have a deal where I can punch up a lot of their race replays. So I'll say, this is the horse you're going to be with. And we'll watch, you know, some of the horses' races, and they're just wide-eyed.
Oh, that's sweet. Well, it gives them a purpose, and they know that they're employed. There's only a few out there that are happy to be a lawn ornament and do nothing. They're much happier with a job.
Exactly. Yeah, that's so true. They want to come up to you in the morning. What do you want to? Yeah, exactly. And they're good at it.
Yeah, exactly. We've said it. Even one of the things that has amazed me just about horses, I've seen them, you know, be violent and mean, and even a fairly difficult horse to be around. When a child is on the shed row, it's all you need to know about a horse. That even a horse with a traffic cone in front as a warning will put their nose down and let a child touch them. It's unbelievable. I mean, they know
it's
an innocent
their
when
yep,
they see
it. Really
it's
is.
Amazing. It's unbelievable.
It's so neat to see.
Yeah. Well, Boone, this is a wonderful. I'm so glad we were able to connect, and I appreciate you reaching out, because this is a project that absolutely can take legs. I mean, and we know, I mean, Warhorse has gotten a lot of here in Saratoga, and I understand they've run into a bit of a, I guess they've actually had a setback, but the concept is so valuable, and we've got, you know, so many off-the-track thoroughbreds that need homes and need a job, here's a perfect example of proactivity that is getting results. I applaud you and Jerry and Janet and everybody involved. Do you guys have, does the ranch have a Twitter?
You know, we do, and I'm so bad on all the social media, I don't think I've ever kept up with it. I had a gal who was going to help me, and then she kind of got busy with her job, and
I'll get it. I'll
look
find
back
it.
Into that. Yeah,
I'll
think,
find
I
it.
I think we do. Okay.
I'll find it, and I'll make sure that there's a way for people to get in touch with you, because I know you're going to get inquiries about people that are saying right now, thinking to themselves, I've got property, I've got paddocks, I've got staff, and how can we do this? Connecting veterans and retired thoroughbred racehorses down the stretch, ranch, and Boone. Well done. Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you.
All the McCannas and everybody doing this work, and continued success. And we'll check in with you now that we know about you.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Merry Christmas to you and yours, too.
Boone McCanna, thank you. And we'll send out a link so that you can help the McCannas. This is really is very cool. And then, you know, discovering these horses where some of these are all horses that you've bet on, too. With Summer Hit won a couple of the All-Americans or Berkeleys or whatever. He was a Northern Cal star and oligarch. Too funny. Trumpet player Jay. He's got... Gangnam Guy. I think Doug O'Neill had. Did Doug O'Neill have Gangnam Guy? He was a stake horse. Calbred. Really cool. I'll put the link up on Twitter. Wait till you see this ranch. You're going to want to go. It's absolutely gorgeous what they've created. Let's take a break. Last of the morning, because we're going to be joined by Jeremy Plonk. We'll get Plonker in here. Yeah, we've only talked, I think, once since Breeders' Cup. So we'll get some year-end thoughts, see what his voting thoughts are for the eclipses. And I still have got to get those further book discussion in. I don't know if we'll be able to save it for tomorrow. All right. Taking Shergar, reminder, Milt Toby, and Out of the Clouds, Linda Carroll and David Rosner. I'll put up this link as well with all the book ideas. Champions, you can't go wrong. The newest edition of Champions with all the race records of Champions through 2016 or 15, I think, through American Pharoah. So, take a break. Come right back. Wrap it up.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Somebody better talk to Vera. I want to talk to she fast. Tell the girls stop harassing me and let me be when I pass. She been begging me all through the year and she wouldn't say she pays. Now it's getting near the Christmas. She here telling me where this place. Why you got to give me for Christmas? Give me anything you can't spare. Why you got to give me for Christmas? Help me have a happy day. Why you got to give me for Christmas? I need something from you. Give me something for Christmas, boy, and I'll give you something too.
We're back, and as promised, I knew we would get in Zach Moore and the Sand Pebbles, and when I sent this to Casey, and I think that was from about 4 years ago, and I sent it to Casey, and he was like, "Oh my God, hadn't heard it in years since he was like a kid," but that's a big Christmas tune on the island. Head out to Pittsburgh for our last visit this morning. Jeremy Plonk is joining us and getting ready, I'm sure, for Christmas in the Plonk household. But there's plenty of racing business, Jeremy, to clean up and wrap up and put a bow on before the calendar turns. Good morning. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. And I've got a good friend in the racing industry that sends me an email every year and wishes me Happy Hanukkah, and I don't have the heart to tell him that I'm Catholic. So by the rule of transference, Steve, I would like to pass that along to you and enjoy the season any way that we all like to celebrate it. But, you know, you all have those uncomfortable things you don't want to tell somebody. But to you and yours, a great season as well.
Well, you're suffering that based on having a, you know, kind of a Semitic sounding name, and the Jeremy fits in the profile, and you know, there's a few things, and I originally thought that direction, but
I guess in handicapping the race, my mom named me after the surfer band, Chad and Jeremy. So I could have been a Chad, but I ended up a Jeremy. So,
oh, that's funny.
The origin
cool.
goes that direction.
That's very funny. I love it. Well, and I also, you know, you made me think of something funny with Marcus Hirsch. And I made an assumption about Marcus being a vegetarian, and he laughed too because he said, "I give off that vibe, but I'm not." And it fits that same scenario. Actually, it's very funny.
We all need to be in an Adam Sandler song, and in the line after O.J. Simpson, Marcus and I can be added in there.
Exactly. Not a vegetarian, not a vegan, and not a Jew. That a boy. Oh, my God. I think, well, Marcus actually qualifies on one of those two counts anyway. Jeremy, I wanted to get, I've been trying to reach you for the last couple of weeks, and you've been busy, and I wanted to get your year-end thoughts, our last Tuesday of the broadcast year, and there's some hardware to be given out in January, the eclipses, and there are some real debates that are now raging, and one is something that is actually getting to be bordering on ugly, and that's the horse of the year discussion. And then there's the one that's sort of mystifying, which is the turf horse category, where people are ready to anoint a sprinter. There's a few interesting topics. Some of your thoughts as the year winds down.
Well, you know, we don't want to say that winning the Triple Crown is watered down because it happened in 2015. It happens again in 2018. So if every year is on to its own in your estimation of who is the horse of the year, then what happened in 2015 should be irrelevant to your thoughts on Justify, and he becomes the 13th horse ever to pull something off in history. And for me, the horse of the year was over in the gallop out of the Belmont Stakes. Anything that happened after that could be outstanding, and Accelerate had an outstanding year in the handicap division. But I walk down the street and ask 20 people who was the horse you know from 2018, and it's Justify. And that doesn't make it a popularity contest if there was nothing to go other than the popularity. You have not only the popularity, but an historic achievement to go with it. And then you take the exercising of Apollo, shoving everything into a compressed schedule. While somebody might want to say, you know, he only had a couple races at the big-time level, never faced older horses. Take what he didn't have on the front end and in foundation, factor that into the impressiveness of what he did. I think it's a one-sided debate. I mean, if somebody, I'm never one to get ugly on these kind of things. Votes and opinions and polls and things like that are in the eye of the beholder. And that's why there are, I don't even know, Steve, you probably know off the top of your head, what's the total number of votes for the Eclipse Awards? It's in the hundreds, right? You know, hundreds.
It is.
Right.
So you have 240.
You have a representative process there that if enough people think the Triple Crown was more impressive than the five huge grade ones that Accelerate threw up there, then the process plays out fairly. You know, I mean, I really don't see any reason to get into a heated or nasty discussion about it, because it's not like it's a panel of three. And if you think somebody comes at it biased and you say, well, okay, this guy's already in the tank for California, this guy's already in the tank for John Sadler, whatever, then you might have yourselves a reason to get, like, you know, a little indignant about it. But there are so many people involved in this process that the right horse will be named Horse of the Year, either way they go. I don't see any reason to get upset if it goes either direction. But if you ask me, it was over in June.
I flirted for a second, you know, within hours of the classic, literally, as Tina and I were starting to drive back to New York. I thought, you know, where people, you know, put up the flare, you know, is Accelerate, you know, a serious, you know, potential Horse of the Year candidate? And a couple of days of considering it, and you know, my own pendulum swung back, and you know, now there's things being said that it seems to me are really kind of outrageous. The latest is this year's 3-year olds weren't any good, so what are you talking about?
I thought it's idiotic. Yeah, that Audible losing this weekend goes to show that the 3-year-old prop wasn't any good. I mean, come on. This is 7 months after the fact of the Kentucky Derby. If you don't think Audible was an outstanding 3-year-old on Derby Day, you kind of missed the boat. You know, I mean, the horse ran a great race to run third. You know, he was fantastic at Gulfstream throughout the spring. Then things went sour. You know, they brought him back, and he hasn't been quite as good on the return as he was when he left, but that doesn't take anything away from it. And look, we all thought this was a really good 3-year-old crop. It's funny how everybody in hindsight now has turned on this 3-year-old crop for whatever reason, you know, whether it's to make your own argument or you know, looking at the records when they've tried to take on older horses, whatever. But when we got to Derby Day and through the Triple Crown, everybody thought this was a pretty darn good crop. And the folks who say now, I'd like to rewind the tape and go back and see which ones of them actually, you know, were on the right end of it. But at the end of the day, and I hate that expression, I'm sorry, I just used it, but when you wrap this discussion up, it doesn't matter, you know? I mean, like, I knew this was a bad 3-year-old crop before you did. What the hell difference does that make, you know? I mean, there's no race to being right, and that's one thing I just loathe about social media. It's not the information age we're in, it's the opinion age. And not only the opinion age, but since Twitter has come along, it's who can put out the fastest opinion, you know? And, God, it's just overreaction. Every Sunday in the NFL, after the 51-50 game or whatever that the Rams and the Chargers played, defense was dead in all of football. And then after this weekend, defense still wins championships, you know, because the Saints can't score now in the last two or three weeks. It's crazy how people are trying to overreact way too fast about everything. And so, you know, there's no need for these kind of discussions, I don't think, to get over the top. And there shouldn't be any vitriol about it. I mean, we're voting who are the best horses. And if you think Accelerate is the second best horse in America, I know this is a society, you know, we don't want to honor everybody with a participation ribbon, but there's no sin in calling him the second best horse in America this year. And there's nothing wrong with that. We never got a chance to settle it on the track. Who knows? You know, those two could have run against each other and ran third and fifth. You know, so are all races and all discussions settled on the racetrack? How many times have we had that, Steve? At the showdown we've all been waiting for, and then neither horse wins, right? So you're going to tell me the horse that had a nothing season but beats them when the chips are down in the Classic or some race late in the year, that horse is suddenly the best horse in America? No. So they're fun. Discussions like this should be fun to talk about. I don't see any reason for them to turn nasty.
Well, from the horse of the year tête-à-tête to a absolute miasma when it comes to the turf horse. What? How are you approaching that?
Well, I'm not a huge fan of like a horse coming in and having one race in America for the year, but this one race is pretty darn good at the Breeders' Cup Classic. You know, I mean, an Able was an all-timer. If the Breeders' Cup turf is the end-all, be-all in the grass division, I mean, what is the alternative would be to say, what is the other race, right? I mean, what is the other defining race in American turf racing? You know,
the Arlington, like, well, the Arlington Million probably comes to most people's mind first.
Yeah, right. And so, how many times in history have we just rubber stamped the Arlington Million winner as the turf champion? I mean, it doesn't work that way, you know? So I think the Breeders' Cup turf is so much more important than all of the other races. And the horse who came in, let's assume, if Enable would have run five times in America this year, do you think he'd have lost, or she would have lost any of them? No, you know? So, again, she was the best turf horse. We don't have a turf male, you know, so you could put her in the turf female discussion.
Right.
But, you know, like, overall champion turf horse, I mean, if you wanted to put an Enable in the mix, I have no problem with that. There really wasn't anybody great turf males this year. I mean, you're flipping coins, you know. Maybe some milers would be in the discussion. I can't really go to the turf sprint ranks. To me, that's kind of niche within a niche within a niche. That's too many. That's too many specialist categories, I think, to say that would be an overall champion on the grass for me. So I probably didn't answer your question that great, but, you know, I would avoid the turf sprinters. I'd have no problem if somebody wanted to make Enable a champion, but obviously she can't be champion turf male, even though she waxed the male. So,
well, that's a problem. That's actually a problem, because there's a lot of people that are saying, well, Enable, I'm not going to let Enable supersede Sister Charlie. I mean, because Sister Charlie's resume is legit.
Right, right. No, and that's a good discussion. And again, and that's another one that makes for a good discussion, is a limited but spectacular resume better than a season-ending outstanding resume? And it kind of, in a more truncated version, takes you to justify and accelerate all over again. Sister Charlie had the accelerate season, and Enable had the justify, which was the flash, but a historic flash and an all-time kind of force, something that we haven't seen before. You know, the historical notables that go with it kind of get added in. You make yourself a couple of assumptions along the way. Well, what if she ran here a few more times? Head-to-head, the old eyeball test. I mean, I don't like the eyeball test in any sports declaration when they're picking committees and things like that. But if Enable and Sister Charlie were in the same race, who would you rather have? Those sort of things like that. That's all part of those discussions. And again, if somebody voted Sister Charlie over Enable, I'd have zero problem with it whatsoever. And if you took Enable over Sister Charlie, I wouldn't have a problem with that either. They're votes. You know, they're votes. And at the end of the, at the end of the season, we award our champions. It means a lot more to the breeders. It means a lot more to the owners of the horses. As fans, we talk about it for a couple weeks because, truthfully, there's not much going on from the end of the Breeders' Cup until the beginning of January. And, you know, and then we're done with it. I mean, like, if Sister Charlie is champion turf female and she runs back next year in April at Keeneland, does that move the attendance at all? Do three more people come to the racetrack because the champion turf mare is there versus just the really good grade one winning mare? I don't think it means anything to the general fan once we get past awards night.
Jeremy, got about, a minute and a half or so, 2 minutes. Your final kind of summary for what you take away from 2018, good, bad, indifferent, horseplay, moments, what stays with you when you think back on the year?
Well, I'd like to see the handle increase is what we've seen. The economy, people have more expendable income and are doing better. That's, you know, certainly a factor. The withholding rules that the NTRA was able to legislate on our behalf certainly have helped the handle, too. So it seems like we're trending in the right direction, but we do have some economic factors working in our favor. So, you know, I want to see a continuation of that. I think some of the things we've seen with the racing schedule has surprised me in some areas where we've had better field sizes and some of these meets that are run longer than I thought they, you know, probably should. But they've done well economically. And so, you know, I'm looking for 2019 to be a continuation of what we've seen. Let's continue this ramp up and see where we can go with things. There's a lot going on in the game that, you know, we'd all love to clean up and change and see work better in our favor. But for the first time in probably, you know, several years, I think we're kind of turned the corner and feeling pretty good about things. And I think that's the takeaway from 2018. Triple Crown winner never hurts anything. Doesn't help the business bottom line, but it feels good, you know? It feels good as a fan in the game to hear everybody you know talking about racing during the course of that month back, you know, in May and June. And that's always a good thing. It doesn't do much for the business carrying over. But, look, as a fan of the game, we love to see great things. If you're a football fan, you'd love to see some team go 16-0 and win the Super Bowl and, you know, 20 years later be able to look back on it and say, man, I followed all those games that year. So, you know, as a sports fan, I think the remarkable things that we saw this year with Enable, what we saw with Justify, and then the positive business trends, I think that's the takeaway for 2018.
Well, and we certainly thank Jeremy and the Horse Player Now team for another great year of night school and closed out last week and be back for ninth great year next year. And
yeah, season Jeremy, nine coming up.
And when does
Countdown to the Crown start?
I was going to say
January. It's on the way.
Well, and that's we'll start those conversations with your next visit.
Let's do it.
Horse Player Now, Jeremy Blanc, everybody. And Jeremy, for you and the family, Merry Christmas, Happy, Healthy New Year. Thanks for everything this year, and thanks for joining us today. Good luck if you're playing today, Tuesday, limited set of options. Want to thank John Toscano. Really fun. Christina Basanakis, who we hadn't talked to in ages about this time about her book that she did with Dwayne Lucas, Sermon on the Mount. Put the link up already. You can order one, and you can get Dwayne signed it. Steve Asmussen, Boone McKenna, and Down the Stretch Ranch. I just put up their information. And Jeremy Blanc, talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
What career track are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.